And welcome to episode 51 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're going to talk about managing your game collection. I guess when Chris gets to over 300 games, it's time to start the intervention. Aww. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. And also a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Josh. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this episode for a while, sort of.
Of course you have.
But we'll get into all that in a minute. First, we should mention our contest. We're giving away two copies of Raxxon, which is Plaid Hat Games' new based in Dead of Winter world co-op killing zombies game. More infected. I guess they're infected, not zombies. But anyway, it's like exclusive, invite only.
Oh, exclusive.
So big deal.
That's sexy.
Two winners, email us, make it say August giveaway on there, and we will announce the winner on, you know, last week I said episode 54. I'm going to do something crazy right now.
Oh,
and it's even in the
you.
Notes right now. It says in the notes, episode 54, Friday, August 25th. Nope. You have until the Gen Con episode, which is episode 53, so we're pulling it in a week, because Massive Darkness is going to come to my door between now and then, and that's going to be our next contest, and that one is just going to be like a huge box of miniatures and Kickstarters exclusives and everything, and I want to start giving that one away right away. So, you have until episode 53. You have up until Friday, August 18th. That's 25 minus 7, to enter. Yep, change the deadline, fine print, which you'll find someplace, I'm sure. I can change anything I want whenever I want.
Oh, you're like the John McCain of the tabletop world. You're such a maverick.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I'm out there.
Yeah.
So, to recap, Raxxon, cool game, two winners. Enter by Friday, August 18th, which is coincidentally the same day as our live Gen Con show, but that show won't drop for a few days later. Speaking of Gen Con, I think this is the last time. No, I get to mention it two more times. It's actually, there's only like 10 seats left. So if you're interested in coming to our Gen Con show, go grab some tickets now. They're free. I guarantee that everybody who comes to the show is going to walk away with a game. Everybody. I'm bringing at least 40 games to the live show. What I'm going to do is we're going to have numbers, and there's going to be a tabletop game tuck pin with a Sharpie on the back, 1 through 40. And we're just going to draw numbers up front, and people can come up, and depending on your number, you get to pick a game off the table.
Wow.
So
I'm actually starting to get FOMO about this.
Yeah, you're going to totally miss out on it. It's cool. It's fine.
That's okay. I'm going to see a celestial event like no other.
It is true.
It happens. Once in how many?
Every 2 years, but sometimes in random parts of the ocean.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. So it's rare that it happens in the U.S.
Yes.
That the last one that happened was, I think, in the early 80s.
Yeah, maybe US. Late 70s.
Late 70s,
like that,
early 80s. I remember I was in elementary school at the time. Man, I'm old. But you guys weren't even born yet.
No.
So come see us at Gen Con. Like I said, everyone's going to win something. Kickstarters. I feel like I'm rushing through this, but I'm really not. We just have some really cool questions coming up, and I'm really excited about this topic. I did not back anything on Kickstarter this week.
Whoa!
I know. There were a number of things going on, and nothing really caught my eye. And then today I was looking, I'm like, all right, here's a few that I'm kind of interested in, but I don't want to rush it. I should actually look at
Take
them.
Take your time.
Who
Take
are you?
He's into it.
That's crazy.
But
he's managing his game club.
I'm impressed.
Part of that is the fact that I've been going through all, like, I say over 300, but I think I probably have closer to 400 games that I'm sorting out right now. So in doing that, I'm like, I kind of want to get all of that straightened out before I start bringing more games in.
Yeah, it's hard to, when you're going through all these games that you haven't played, it's hard to justify new games. Wow, that pile's big.
Exactly. So, and if there was something that caught my eye, it was certainly probably, actually, yeah, if it caught my eye, I'd back it. There's one that I do want to give an honorable mention to. So normally, any game I talk about on here, it's something I've actually backed. If I don't, I let you know. So this one I'm going to let you know I have not backed, but it is something that you should be aware of if you're into Kickstarters or you're into miniature games or Cool Mini or not. CMON, whatever they're calling themselves these days. A Song of Ice and Fire tabletop miniatures game Ooh. Is currently active.
Oh, Game of Thrones is so hot right now.
Yeah.
I have not seen the latest episodes, but...
Oh, I have to catch up on the last one.
No spoilers. I haven't even started this season.
I haven't watched it in like 5 years.
Okay. So you have so much you get to catch up on. I'm so jealous.
Oh my God.
This game is a tabletop miniatures game. Think X-Wing miniatures, but with Game of Thrones armies. The base is $150. Actually, it's the only pledge level is $150, but it's Cool Mini or Not, so they will have different add-ons and things that you can get. But it's also Cool Mini or Not, so it means they're going to get a ton of exclusives. I don't know anything about this game and how it plays. I tend to avoid the tabletop miniatures because I just collect board games. If I was to go into too many different collectible games, I would actually just have to live in a box on the street. So I'd have a lot of games boxes to live in, though. So maybe that could work out.
You could have a whole castle.
Yeah,
I could have. You've got.
So I don't do that. But for the people who are interested in Game of Thrones and miniature games, just know this is out there, and it's you're going to get your money's worth for $150. And then the rest, we'll quick questions. We're going to talk about Kickstarters quite a bit. So, Josh, why don't you take us some feedback?
Indeed. Well, yes, let's get some feedback about past episodes. If you have any feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. So the first one's from Michael Ohl. So here we go. A few thoughts. Chris, if you wouldn't label apples to apples as a word game, how would you label it? You're taking a word and associating it with an adverb. I seem to recall doing the exact same thing, minus the voting, in grammar school English classes.
So, Michael, you got a good point. So, if we remember, this was prompted because last week's the word game episode, he talked about apples to apples. He said, actually, of course, apples to apples, as added on to a bunch of other word games. And I interjected, I would not necessarily agree with that. It's not so much that I don't think apples to apples is a word game. I think it probably is a word association.
It's a word association game, but I think you're not actually
using... Which is still a word game.
Yeah.
Well, you're not using the parts of speech in any way. You are associating the words, but to me it feels more like a party game.
Kind of more like a story creation type of thing. 'Cause you're
using words?
Yes.
I think it's a word game.
Yeah,
me too. And I agree.
I put it in the like taboo, Cards Against Humanity, yep. Those kinds of like party word games where it's not as much about the grammar, spelling, hard parts of language building.
More I guess the that's fun what he was thinking when he challenged it.
And
just that separation.
No, I completely agree. It's a word game.
Oh, cool.
What I disagree with is the word of course, Chris, or the phrase, of course.
Chris, did you just admit you were wrong about something?
No.
No, he's not.
What I'm saying is I disagree with a different part of it.
He said it wasn't a word game, now you're saying it is a word game.
But of course, apples to apples. And my argument is I don't know anybody who would play apples to apples, so it didn't seem like an of course game. If someone said, like, of course, Cards Against Humanity, even though everyone knows my opinion on that, I would say, yeah, everyone's playing that game. It's whatever. Of course, they're playing it.
Right.
But apples to apples, I haven't seen played literally since Cards Against Humanity came out.
Yeah, right. It's true. It kind of got replaced.
Right. However, I am willing to admit that is my circle of friends, as terrible as those friends are.
If you have family, though, surely you're playing apples
and
to
apples.
Much more family-friendly game.
And that's what got me thinking. It's like, just because my circle isn't playing apples to apples anymore doesn't mean that other people aren't playing it, because I would probably rather play apples to apples than Cards Against Humanity. At least most people will play apples to apples to an ending point. So, Michael, you're right. I concede. Michael had some other feedback too that we were going to scatter in throughout the episode. I also want to make note to Sam, you have a lot of feedback and input into this episode too, but I will definitely track down Jacob at Gen Con, so tell him to keep an eye out for me, and I'll say hi. Sam knows what I'm talking about. Yep, we are got to the
oh
point where we just talked to one
so
listener.
Inside
wow.
That's really insane.
No, Sam was saying he's not going to be there, but he has a friend who's running some demos, and he listens to the show, so I should track him down. So I'm going to do so.
Well, thanks for letting us in on the story.
Yeah,
it's very kind of you.
All right, so let's go to a question from one of our listeners. This is a question that won't fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Terrence. I have looked at a couple games and saw that they were Kickstarters, but noticed there are seriously cool things that were Kickstarter exclusives. So I have to think twice about buying a game at retail, knowing there are some parts for it that I won't be getting. If I'm not alone in feeling this way, it's got to have an impact on the retail market for these games. What are the Kickstarter things that can be offered that do not hamper the long-term success of a particular game?
So I think this is an interesting observation because I actually have the same problem. I mentioned Arcadia Quest and saying, you know, when I first got into Arcadia Quest, it was like, I want to get all of the things that's ever kickstarted for this game. And so I'm like, do I even want to get into it? So I ended up buying the game and then I ended up paying through the nose for all of the exclusives on top of that. Since then, I haven't done it again. So if I pick up a Kickstarter game that had Kickstarter exclusives, I'm just like, all right, if the game is fun, it's going to be fun without the exclusives. If the exclusives were necessary, then it should have been...
There's a problem with the base game.
Right. Now, Terrence's other question here is, though, does this have an effect on the long-term sales of Kickstarter games? And I've talked to a few publishers about this particular thing. When a game is kickstarted, you have an initial excitement about the game, and you're going to sell a certain quantity of the game. And oftentimes, Kickstarter games, you will see never get picked up by a publisher. They were kickstarted, that's the quantity exists, period, end of story. Because all of the demand has already been met by the Kickstarter. So publishers aren't picking this up anyway. It doesn't matter if there were Kickstarter exclusives, and the person putting the Kickstarter out was just trying to get you to buy into the Kickstarter, which is what the exclusives are for. So I don't know that this actually has any long-term effect on most Kickstarter games. And publishers will pick it up if it's going to be something that's super popular.
I think if the exclusives are very important to you, you need to be following Kickstarter like Chris does. Yeah. You really, like, these are bonuses for people who are putting themselves out there, who are taking the risk to fund the initial print of the game. And if you weren't part of that, you know, you missed out. And, you know, Josh is talking about the fear of missing out, you know.
Yep.
If you have, you know, fear of missing out, you should be keeping an eye on Kickstarter to keep an eye out for those really fun games and get those exclusives through Kickstarter. Otherwise, you know, yeah.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, you know, if anything, the impact might be more that it's just more of a popular game. Maybe some games are actually just a lot more popular because they're funneled through Kickstarter, because they have that choo-choo, let's get on the hype train. Yeah.
Well, the Kickstarter exclusives, too, this is a huge issue on Kickstarter. Do you do it or do you not?
Right.
It's a tricky one to do because I say, oh, Kickstarter exclusives, I'm more likely to back it because there's exclusive, so I get that extra something. Whereas if there's not a Kickstarter exclusive, I'll wait and see. Not me personally, but most people will probably wait and see. You know, maybe it'll do good, maybe not, but I'll get it after the Kickstarter, and I can probably get it cheaper because, you know, its retail tends to be discounted if you do buy it after the fact, if it comes out at all. So it's sort of like a self-perpetuating thing. If they put up exclusives, they get more sales. If they don't, they get less sales, but more likely they could sell it later.
I don't know that it is more likely to sell later.
Exactly. And neither do the people putting up on Kickstarter.
So you might as well offer those bonuses to the people who are willing to take the risk for you.
Well,
you're giving them incentive to, like, I mean, that's why they're there, is incentive to buy the game in that moment.
Yep. Well, let's take a look at Cool Mini or Not. I just talked about Game of Ice and Game of Ice and Fire.
Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah. There's a bunch of Kickstarter exclusives there. And that is Simon's model. Is we're going to do this Kickstarter. It's going to raise millions of dollars. But we're going to give the people who are investing in this game a year plus out before you're going to actually get it a whole bunch of extra stuff. Because of those people, they can go out and produce massive quantities of these games. If it wasn't for Kickstarter, they wouldn't be able to do that. So it's a model that works for them. And for Cool Mini or Not, I actually will go and back their stuff because it's usually $100 to $120 and you're going to get a whole bunch of extra stuff. And for me, it's like I'm probably going to benefit from it. You know, if it's a really good game, you can probably turn around and sell it for 2 to 3 times as much as you invested in it, too. So that's what I did with Massive Darkness is I bought 2 copies because there's a whole bunch of Kickstarter exclusives in there. I'm not going to sell the second copy. I'm going to give it to one of you people, but still.
Nice.
All right. So we have some related here from Sam. So recently, many Kickstarter games have been expansions to existing games that also allow you to buy the original. As a result, I'll be getting the base as well as a ton of expansions for several games. Not sure if you do the same, but if you do, will you start playing the game with the expansion in it since you may or may not have had opportunities to play the game? You may or may not have opportunities to play the game again. There you go. Sorry, Sam. Looking at my ever-growing collection, I have so many games where I have only touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the expansions for the game. I'm looking at Arkham Horror, Pandemic, Cosmic Encounters, King of Tokyo. But spending time playing all the elements of all the expansions would not allow me to ever play another game, let alone do anything with my already busy life.
Wow, he's making it sound like a full-time job. Is that really how involved some of these expansions are?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So like Arkham Horror, for example, well, pick your flavor of Arkham Horror because Fantasy Flight is constantly putting expansions for every single one of them.
Right.
But like the Arkham Horror card game, there's a new expansion that comes out every single month. Oh. Now, it's a storyline. So it's like 6 packs make the story.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's like a full-time job. You get it and you play it and, you know, it's a lot of work. What do you guys think about this? Like, if you get a game with an expansion, do you mix it together or do you play one and then add the expansion in?
I have a much smaller game collection and I'm much more careful about bringing games into it. So I would definitely start with the base game. If I don't like the base game, I don't know that I want to, you know, like spend the time with, I don't know.
To learn the expansion on top of
it. Yeah. I don't know that I would have bought a base game and expansion together, though, because I'm so cautious that way. But maybe, you know, there are some games where an expansion makes it so much better. And so, it's really fun to play that, only with the expansion.
That's what I'm thinking is the only time, I agree with you on basically everything, maybe the only time I would do that would be that someone showed me the game with the expansion and I liked it so much that maybe I'm like, oh, well, I couldn't not have the expansion.
Yeah. So the example that he, I added this for brevity. Brevity, that's the word, right?
Yeah.
There's Deception Murder at Hong Kong. It's being released, the expansion's being released and you can buy the base game with it. Now, we've played Deception Murder at Hong Kong.
Many times.
And recently I gifted my version away, loaned it out, and apparently it was damaged, so now it's a gift. You're welcome, Becky. But when I backed it, I backed the base game as well. So it's like, oh, I'll just get the whole thing all at once and get the expansions as well. In this particular case, because I've played the base game, I will probably mix the expansion in with the base game. Plus, that expansion and Cosmic Encounters, where you're just getting extra options when you're setting up the game, I think those expansions you can just mix right in because it doesn't change or add any new rules. It's, you know, especially
more
for
the same.
Right. For Deception Murder Hong Kong, it's just a bunch of weapons and a bunch of clues. If you add in, you know, another stack of clues, yeah, it's just more of the same. And in that case, I just added it.
So the classic example is Settlers of Catan. There's the one expansion, which just adds more pieces and gives you the ability to play with more players. Yep,
the 5-6 expansion, you can just throw it in there.
But then all of the other expansions add so many more rules, so much more complexity, so much more going on that I wouldn't have necessarily
started with
thrown those in immediately. Yeah.
And Carcassonne's kind of the same way.
Yeah.
You know, you can mix in any of those expansions, but they all have their own little nuances and rules.
And how many you throw in, really, they all start affecting each other and you have like flow charts of information you have to be aware of going in.
Yeah. The short answer to this question is I always play the base game without the expansions first. And even with Deception, I've already played the base game. So in this case, I'll mix it in, but that's because I've already played it. And the reason for it is actually, always play the base game before the expansions if there's additional rules in the expansion. If it's more of the same, I'll mix it right in. The reason is learning rules to games is hard. You know, there's a lot there. And if you're going to read one rule book, okay, now we know how to play the base game, even though we've never done it. Now we're going to pull out this other rule book, and this is how it modifies the rules. That's a little too much to do in one sitting. If you play the base game and you enjoy it, add in the next expansion in your very next game and see if you enjoy it with that expansion. If you do, the expansion is part of the game. Never take it out. If you don't, pull it out. You know, the game that you guys can never remember the name to.
Blood Rage?
There you go. has two different expansions. Actually, I think three. Two or three? Well, anyway, the Mystics we put in and we just leave in the Mystics expansion. But the Gods, we put that in, didn't really care for it, and just pulled it direct.
Like, I don't right think back I out. Ever got to play it with the Gods because you guys disliked it that much.
Yeah, it just didn't add really much of anything. So it's like, this is just more fiddly or just unnecessary. You're going to pull that out. But I really like the Mystics because the Mystics are just more of the same. It's another unit that you can possibly get, and that doesn't feel like you're learning new rules or anything like that. Yeah. There's no extra upkeep or anything. So that's my thing on that. All right. Let's go on topic where we can... Oh, wait. There's another...
Go on topic.
All right. I'm pressing this button.
In this episode, we're talking about managing your game collection. How do you store your games? Where? What? How? We won't touch on why because that's easy. They're games. That's why. But we will touch on a lot of other topics and we'll use Chris's recent purge to help drive the conversation.
Yeah, so first, let me highlight the purge. I think we've mentioned it a few times, but...
Sounds like a game, The Purge.
The Purge. Actually...
By Eric Lang.
That'd be a great game then. Yeah. I think that I've hit about 400 games. On Board Game Geek, I think it's closer to 300, but I have a bunch of small box games and expansions and stuff that I didn't track. And that's not even counting the role playing stuff, but that goes in its own bookshelf. So I'm not really too worried about that.
You're not counting those. Okay.
Yeah. No. But what ended up happening is I just kept making a pile of games and the pile behind Kitty got bigger and bigger and bigger
until I was afraid it was going to collapse down upon me in an avalanche and kill me underneath.
I mean, a truck could rumble by and then the whole stack could have fallen over. It was pretty bad. The worst part of it, though, is every time someone wanted to play a game, I would just look and be paralyzed by the selection. It's like, well, I want to play this because that's a new game. But I don't want to have to learn the rules while teaching the game. And then there's all these games over here, but no, that one's, no. Oh, that one might be okay, but, and I couldn't pick a game. So then it's like, okay, fine, Codenames.
And you end up playing the same games over and over and over again because they're just the ones that are like, and I know this will work.
Well, that, and you then have a massive collection of games you've never played.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm just like, all right, I got to do something about this. So
everyone hits their rock bottom at some point in their addiction.
Well, what was the game that did it? You finally looked at the table and you had a game in your hand. Do you know what it was?
You know, it was probably when I came back with the last bagful of games. And I just got done playing Mechs versus Minions. So that's going to go back into the pile. And that's a really big box games. And I just had picked up Dresden Files, which was a co-op game, which I really enjoyed playing. But I'm like, okay, that one's not going to get played again. And then I had games that I'd brought to the gaming event. We've talked about the past couple episodes. And those came back and they just stayed in the bags I was carrying them in because I didn't have any place to put them, even though those were the games I really wanted to play. Yeah. So they weren't even in the collection. I'm just like, okay. So what I ended up doing, and there's at least one picture on Twitter, and that was like the first quarter. I just started taking all the games and stacking them in the hall. And about 4 feet tall, about 12 feet long. Then I started clearing off the shelves because there's a shelving unit from IKEA that is the Kallex, K-A-L-L-E-X. They're used a lot for like record stores. They're like basically the exact size of a record. And
see, I think of them as I see them mostly with bins in them full of children's toys.
More children's
because
toys.
That's where I hang out.
Yeah. They're like the perfect size for all kinds of things. They're just over a foot wide and or maybe just over, just under. They're about a foot by a foot. I don't know how much that is in centimeters, but 25 centimeters ish. No, 30.
The cat seems to like the size of them.
Yes, it fits the cat just fine. Right. So they come in multiple sizes. They come in 2x2, 2x4. These are cubbies. They come in 4x4. And recently I discovered they come in 5x5. So that's 25 cubbies. I have two of them. So that's 50 cubbies. Each cubby fits anywhere from three like thick games to five like normal sized games. All of the cubbies were full. Plus I had a bunch of games outside of that.
You had plus, a mountain like, of games outside of that. A
bunch of cubbies with like maybe 15 small box games in them.
Yeah, they can fit an endless number of small box games.
Oh yeah.
So I'd cleared off the shelves completely, stacked everything up, and then as I was putting games back on the shelves, I said, all right, I'm only going to put games on the shelf that I actually would play today. If someone said, hey, want to play this game? I would say, yes, let's play this game. That filled one of the 5x5 shelves. The other shelves are games that I'm like, maybe it's time for them to go. I don't know. I should give them another play to decide. And that's about a third of that shelf. And then the other two-thirds of that shelf is games I've never played.
Wow.
Or I'm calling the intake zone.
Well, you didn't back any Kickstarters.
Exactly. Which I have a lot of games I haven't played. So that's kind of how I set it up. And then I still have the initial, probably more than the picture, a good 50 or 60 games sitting in the hall that I'm going to be bringing to Gen Con to.
So if anyone happens to be in Chicago, wants to meet Chris and Kitty, come round and pick up a couple of games. He's got a bunch that he wants to get rid of.
Yeah. Well, anytime, as I say, I'm going to bring, it's going to be tricky to get them all to Gen Con, but I'm not leaving that room with them. So
it's not everyone who comes to the show gets a game. It's everyone who comes to the show must take a game. You can't leave without one.
Lock the doors.
Well, and these aren't like, you know, games that are, this isn't like an old game of Scrabble or anything like that. No. Like one of the things I'm giving away are Sentinels of the Multiverse. It's a co-op superhero superhero deck fighting game. So every super is represented by a deck of cards and you're fighting the master villain. I have three or four boxes of that have never actually been played. I bought it because I enjoyed playing it with somebody else and I just never played my copy of it. I'm just going to give that all away in one chunk. There's several D&D games that I bought for the miniatures and stuff like that, that are like multiple boxes. Tactical strategy, you know, miniatures game. Just going to bundle that all together, give that away. There's a ton of things. Kingdom Builder, Spectre Ops, Memoir 44, Gears of War, Mansions of Madness. And that's just the first deck that I can see out of the corner of my eye. So these are good games.
Yeah.
The stuff I kept, I would rather play.
Right.
So yeah, so that's what brought this whole episode on. Kitty, you mentioned that you had some stuff that you wanted to bring up. And you have a different size collection.
I do have a different size collection. I don't remember now what I was going to bring up.
Fair enough.
Pulling our weight as usual.
I know.
So most people's game collections, we were talking about this just before the show.
Yeah.
Many houses you walk into, you open up the coat closet, you look up and you look to the right and there's a stack of family board games. Usually goes Monopoly, Scrabble, maybe a Trivial Pursuit, possibly a Yahtzee.
Twister.
Oh, yeah. There's usually some party a Twister games, in there. Yeah. Yep. Maybe a Jenga. And that's the game collection. If I see a Settlers of Catan or a Ticket to Ride, I'm like, there's potential in this house. But typically, that's what people's collections look like, right? There's also collections that are kind of in the middle. A small shelf where maybe you have 10 or 20 games. The Board Game Geek thread on this is actually pretty cool because there's a bunch of pictures of people's different collections.
Yeah, because I don't know how extreme other people get. I've only seen you and you're like a game store on steroids. So I don't feel like that's very typical.
Well, what is your collection?
I have like maybe five or six games and most of them I've like inherited them from like either you or some other people I know. There's like some, I don't know. It's not Piggly Wiggly. That's that really funny grocery store that you guys have here that I Snapchatted to all my British friends. No, it's some pigs game where you toss these pigs and then, I don't know.
Pass the pigs?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I inherited a few, and they've all gone in the coat closet as well. It's really weird that you said that everyone keeps it in the coat closet, because it, for some reason, we've done the same thing. And I had no idea this was a
I thing. See it everywhere. Yep.
Oh, yeah, tons of people.
Yep. So I don't have many.
Either the front coat closet, or if there's one person in particular in the household who, like, it's their game collection, it's in their bedroom closet. Okay. But it's always on the top shelf, where it's really hard for short people to get games down.
Yeah, yeah. And they only come out during the holidays.
Right.
Typically.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We just did it because we don't have any shelves, because we don't like IKEA, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you don't have the need for it just yet.
Yeah, we don't.
So, Kitty, your game collection.
I'd say I have around like a 15 to 20 game collection. I have always been, like, I grew up in a house where the game collection didn't fit in a closet. We had, at first in my old house growing up, we had like a family like toy and game closet that was pretty big, and it also housed all of our VHS collection.
VHS and games.
Awesome.
Yep.
And now that moved to my parents' basement, and there's probably like two bookshelves full of, it's hard to say how many of them are board games and how many of them are jigsaw puzzles, because my mom is a huge jigsaw puzzle fan, but I'd say probably one full bookshelf, typical size bookshelf full of board games at my parents' house. And when I moved out, I took a few of them with me, and I've grown my collection to maybe like 15, 20 games. And I filled my media center under my TV because I don't have any DVDs. I don't have any VHSs or CDs, records. I don't collect any of those things. I have games. So, you know, my one little Apple TV only takes up so much space, but the TV had to go up off the floor, so now I've got all this empty space. It was a perfect spot for my game collection.
Yep. Well, and a friend of mine, Jordan, I remember this was years ago, we were talking, and he has a pretty decent collection, probably 30 or 40 games, and he stopped buying games when the cabinet filled up. You know, basically, the cabinet's full. I can't get any more games because I don't have any place to put them. So, and I really started thinking about that when I started putting games back on the shelf. I'm like, it doesn't matter how many games I have. Like, I have a crazy amount of games, but I have a crazy amount of space to put the games. And if there's a place for them, that's okay.
Right.
Josh, you have the top of the closet.
Yeah.
If you have more games than that, you're like, okay, I don't really have any place to put this game. I need to start deciding what goes, because right. This is my limited storage. Right. You have your entertainment center, Kitty, and which is, you know, once that's full, you either get more storage or you start deciding what goes in or comes out. And that's...
Spencer accuses me of being a squirrel because I would not stop or like find a new dedicated place for them. I would just start hiding them in various places in my house. And it'd be like, oh, you want to play Bananagrams? Hold on. And I'd like crawl into the bedroom closet. Oh, hold on. Settlers of Catan is back in the den. And
by,
you know,
my shoes.
But I know where everything is.
I think, Sam, you have... So if you go on the Board Game Geek thread, which is just tabletopgametalk.com/BGG, it'll take you right there. Go to episode 51. Sam has a post on there. It kind of looks like Christy's post when she posted about all the game modifications and all the pictures and stuff. But really, it's all the different nooks that Sam has stored the games.
A fellow squirrel. Hooray, like, it's Sam. Everywhere.
So I'm like, all right, Sam, you may have a more bigger problem than I do. Well, maybe. I don't know, because you have them all spread out. Yeah. But he has them separated by, you know, these are where the party games go, and this is where the bigger games go, and this is just where this happened to land. So it's interesting when you start thinking about it, is maybe the number of games I have in my collection is just solely based on what I can fit. And that's it. And then any new game I pull in, I decide, is it worth keeping, or do I get rid of it? And so I listen to the Dice Tower podcast a lot, and that's what Tom Vassell does. He has his like 100 games that's in his collection, but obviously he's being sent review copies all the time. So he'll play a game, review it, and decide, do I want to keep this game? And if he does, he puts that in his collection and he removes something else.
And doesn't he like rank them as well?
Oh yeah, he has like everything's ranked, and he has his, right. All of that top 100 every year, and
so much more organized than I could ever be.
Right? Yeah, because I remember we were talking to David Serlin, and he was talking about how basically Codex had gone above Magic for Tom Vassell in his collection, and he was really psyched about that.
Exactly. Codex is still a great game, and when I cleaned up my stuff, Codex is a game that stayed.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, we can now play this. I just pulled up the Star Wars.
Because we haven't seen it in forever. Exactly. Because it was buried under piles of other stuff. Yeah. Yep.
I just played the Star Wars Living Card Game with Sydney because, oh, it's available now. Look, this is now a game I really want to play again. So let's play this. So I think what it is, what I learned from this process is to keep only the games I can fit and really force myself to choose. If I have 100 games, just let's just say, and that's still bigger than most people's collections, but if I have 100 games, in order to play each of those games within a reasonable time frame, let's say at least once a year, I have to play two different games a week that entire year.
And that doesn't give you the ability to repeat a single game.
Exactly. So if I can't have just a top 100, I probably have a bigger problem than just storage.
Yeah, because it's, again, like you said earlier, it's that analysis paralysis problem. Like if you have more than, I mean, even if you have 100, it's going to be difficult. But if you have more than 100, I mean, it's like that problem we used to have when we went to the Blockbuster when it existed. You know, you'd go with someone and you'd spend like an hour like deciding between you which film you were going to watch, because you could never decide between each other. There was too many.
For everyone who's younger, Blockbuster is what we call Redbox now. So,
except it was huge and it was full of VHSs.
And you had to actually walk
Google
around.
That.
But yeah, so it's like stripping it down to just the games you want to play was very therapeutic. And it would actually really worked well. Jason Strong actually posted something on Board Game Geek about a story of a YouTube video of a guy who was like, almost having anxiety attacks thinking of getting rid of his games. But in the end, he found it very cathartic.
Cathartic? That's amazing.
Cathartic.
Say that word again.
Cathartic?
That's the word.
Yeah.
And then Jason actually mentioned for himself, he's like, space is the limit. You know, he really has to love a game to have it be worth bringing it in and keeping it around, which I think is good. And we can all learn from this.
It's like having the super highways built. Like, oh, let's expand these highways. That will alleviate traffic. But it doesn't, because more traffic comes and fills the space and you've got the same problem again.
Yep. So we were talking about the top of the closet. Aaron, back to the winner of our last contest, sent us a picture of the top of his closet. There's like 8 to 10 games there. He's like, I have one of everything, like all the different types I need. He's looking for a good party game. Aaron, if I find a good party game, I'll throw it in the box that I have.
If I haven't stolen them all before. I love party games.
Trying to think of a good one. The problem is you don't want to give someone, I don't know, because there is something about when Chris was cleaning out his game collection, a lot of the rejects that he didn't want, me and Josh were both like, oh, I'll take this one. Yeah. So it's to each their own. It's not like the games you're giving away are bad games. They're just not the ones you always want to play.
Right. I have games I would rather play than those, but I would totally play them. What was the one, the submarine one?
Oceanos.
Are we saying that right yet?
I think so.
That's what we've been calling it. Yeah, but it's a really cute game. You're diving for treasure and, you know, Krakens are trying to grab you and all this kind of stuff. I like the game and I would sit down and play it. If Kitty's like, hey, come and let's have a glass of wine and play Oceanos, I'd be like, all right, I'll be up in a minute. But if she was going to be like, do you want to play a game? I'm like, that's not the one I'm going to pick. Right. I'm going to pick, you know, Cry Havoc or something like that.
But it's totally one I would pick over Cry Havoc or Blood Rage any day of the week. It's much more my style, much more puzzly, much more point salad-y. Love that. And I took it out of your collection and whisked it off to play with my family yesterday. I made them play it 2 times and we had a ton of fun.
Yeah. So it's hard to tell. There's so many good games out there, but I can't keep them all.
Well, it's kind of a good opportunity for you as well to, like, and anyone can do this if they're doing a purge and getting rid of stuff, is to think about all the people you know and they're close to you and think, okay, so now I get to play the store clerk at the game thing and say, hey, you haven't played this game yet, but I know your style. I know the games you like. You really need to, here, I'm giving you this game. And you can kind of maybe pull some people further into the hobby that way, I guess, with it re-gifting and things.
Yeah. And actually, I personally have no problem giving games away. You know, it's like if I'm loaning someone a game, I put loaning in air quotes because right. I'm like, I'm giving you this game so you can play it. And if I come over and that's the game you want to play, that's great. But I don't need it back because I'm just hoping that you will want to play that game.
If it's something that I love that much, I do this with books. Like if it's a book that I really love that much that I want you to read, but I don't want to give you my copy, I will buy you a copy yeah. of that book. I cannot tell you how many different people's addresses I have saved in my Amazon account because I have shipped them like, oh my gosh, you have to read this book, but I'm not giving you mine. And yeah, because once I give someone a book, usually it's just like, I'm done with this. This is yours now.
Yep.
I don't want it back. I don't want to have to worry about trying to get it back from you. I don't want it to become a thing in our relationship.
Whether you dog-eared the page or not.
I'm a page dog-earer. I know that it's like terrible.
No, I'm exactly the same way. It's only crazy people like Chris that's really OCD.
I won't even open up the book far enough to crack the spine.
Whereas how do you read the book?
I have books. Yeah. I have books that are like literally in two pieces because I've read them so many times, and especially if they're bigger books, they just crack in half. And at that point, it becomes easier because then you read the first half and then you can leave that at home and take the second half
with
you. That's
so cool. That's like a badge of honor. It's like, yeah, look how much I read this thing.
All right. Well, Sam sent us an email. Actually, a lot of this was from Sam's questions. I'm highlighting a few of these just to make sure that we touch on the points. And we have some listener feedback from the BGG thread that will help answer some of these questions. So the first one is, how do you organize your game collection to get access to the games you need? Now this, do you try to keep similar themed games together? Do you keep games together by publisher/designer? Do you group them by box size or shape? Is it just a hodgepodge game of Tetris? How do you enter expansions into your collection? This is something that is actually kind of... I was never really into the big box debate, which I'm coining that term, the big box gaming debate, big game box debate. Games come in all shapes and sizes. Now, there tends to be a standard size that you see, like your square box that's about maybe 2 inches deep. That tends to be a kind of a standard. I'd say probably 40% of the games come in that size. But then the other 60% come in just all kinds of wacky sizes.
Any other size.
When I'm putting these games back, that was my biggest problem of how do I make all these things fit? So the first time I put these things on the shelves, I stacked them so that the box was flat. And what ended up happening there is if I wanted to grab a game from the bottom, I had to like do this thing kind of like a Houdini, pull the tablecloth out from under the flower thing.
Oh, we're all doing so many hand motions.
Jenga, Jenga.
Yeah. And it was kind of a mess. So this time I'm like, all right, I'm going to put everything on the shelves. I'm going to put them in book style. That is on its side. But I had to open up every single box to make sure that everything was securely put in so that when I put them on
usually
the side...
Usually bagged.
Bagged, yes, exactly. So I removed the inserts from every game I kept. I put all the cards in bags so that I could put them on the side. I knew what side was going to go on the bottom, and I just kind of moved everything to that side, put the lid on, and then put it in sideways. Now, when I go, I just grab it like I'm grabbing a book off the shelf, and I'm not... There's no bias of, well, that game's on the bottom of the stack, so let's pick a different game.
Yeah, especially that game weighs 20 pounds, isn't on the bottom of the stack under another 20-pound game where I'm going to, like, put out a shoulder trying to get this out.
Which is not... Some of these games are really, really heavy.
They get really heavy, especially ones that are so full of cards. Decks yep. of cards are heavy.
Yeah.
We've discussed this before.
We have. It's a mess. So that's how I'm storing them now is on their side. And that's how I would recommend everybody store your games. Store them on the side.
I noticed a lot of the newer games that you have actually have the name printed that way so that it is read when the box is vertical.
Yep. So it's like flat. And actually some games will have on two sides, they'll have the vertical, and on two other sides, they'll have the horizontal print. And that's actually not necessarily for storage. It's so games can, or game stores can put them on their shelves in any which way.
Yeah.
So people can see it easily from the side of the box.
Yeah, because if you had it all one way and a game store stacked it the opposite way, then maybe people wouldn't read the name.
It's hard to read.
Yeah, right.
I do like the both ways
yep.
printed games.
So those are my standard size boxes. Now, I have small boxes, which are kind of like the patchwork size, code names, Spyfall.
I put those in medium-sized boxes.
Yeah, the medium-sized stuff. Those ones I am actually stacking vertically, I guess?
I would say
flat on top of each other.
Horizontally.
Horizontally. So they're flat.
The boxes are horizontal.
Yeah. I'm not putting them like books, like a bookshelf. I'm putting them flat.
You've Jenga'd them again.
Yes. And that's mostly because they're small, so I can pull off the entire stack and grab the one I want. And it just fits better on the shelves I have. I can usually put them side by side so that I can put two stacks inside of one cubby and store, I think the one I'm looking at right now has like 12 games in it. Then I have the small, the decks of cards, the double decks of cards, or anything that's like a small box game. And this was the big challenge. I was pulling out a lot of inserts, and we'll get to expansions in a second, but I ended up with a lot of extra boxes of game boxes because I was taking all the expansions out and mixing them with their base.
I noticed our trash today.
It was my fault, actually. I was going to break things down. Sydney took out the trash before I had a chance to squash it all down. But there was a lot of inserts. It was like a lot of inserts. But so now I'm taking a standard size game box, just the top and the bottom, and separating them and putting all the cards in there and treating those as kind of like a drawer into the shelves. And then so I can put like, you know, 20 different card games in each half of the box and then just stack those boxes on top of each other. So it's easier. I just pull out as a tray and say, oh, here, let's play this one or let's play that one. So that's how I am storing these things. They're not by genre. They're not by player count. They're not by designer. They're not by theme. Hopefully I never get to the point where I have to organize to that point, because I can just look at all my games and pick the one I want.
Do you think you'll ever do a Tom Vassell and put them in sort of 1 to 100 in order of how much you like them and then rearrange it as things, as your
Might come up with a top 10.
Okay.
But no, I think once you get past 10, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It, for me, it's a pass-fail.
Yeah.
It's like, these are my favorites, but then everything else is either you're in or you're out.
Right.
Which makes it a little easier. Whether or not I update Board Game Geek with the pass-fail, I don't know. It's just a lot of work to maintain that stuff.
Have you gone through your Board Game Geek page and eliminated the ones that you are getting rid of from your collection?
Not yet, but I do plan to.
Okay.
So, because it's actually easier to update than it is to add. It's just a whole lot faster. You're just going to click, 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 click. So that, you guys, like I say, you have smaller collections, but you store your games flat, right, Kitty?
I do, mostly because of the shape of my furniture.
Yeah.
They fit better that way. Also because I don't have that many heavy games. I tend to play both lighter games in style and physical weight. So I think it's a little bit easier. I don't have to worry about, like, you know, dropping Twilight Imperium or something on my head. Nothing's up that high. Nothing is that heavy. So, yeah.
And Josh,
I like the idea of having somewhere, you know, that's kind of more of a social space in your house to display them. Like at the moment, I've got them in the classic cupboard with
hidden
the
away.
Coats. Yeah. But like, I like the idea because I can forget, you know, if people are around, I can forget that that's even an option. So it'd be nice to have it visible in the front room so that people who, when they're around, go, oh, what's this you've got? And then maybe that is the kind of impetus to be like, oh yeah, maybe we should play this social deduction game. Why not? Let's get it cracking.
Oh yeah. It's definitely a conversation piece. When people come into my house, because you have to go past the game room to get into the kitchen, they always like, oh my God, you have so many games. I'm like, yeah, let me know if you want to play sometime.
Right.
You know, and it gets, you know, people start talking and asking questions. And
picking things up off the thing. Ooh, what's this?
Yep.
The place of my game collection right now that is frustrating to me is that it is in the room where I don't have a table. So if you want to play the game, you have to bring it into the other room. And if you're in the room with a table, you might not see the games that we could play so easy right then because we're all sitting around a table. So yep. I have to work on that.
Yeah, because and it's because you have to go to the front room where the TV is.
And then where you're usually so comfy in those. They're the more comfortable chairs. You're settled in. You're not as likely to then move to the dining room to sit down and play a game.
Yep, no, totally agree. So Sam goes on, as the gaming collection grows, do you find yourself having less meaningful connections to games because you don't play them as much? And I think we've covered this a little bit. but absolutely 100%.
Yes.
Now that I've purged these games, the ones that are left, I'm like, you've made the cut. You're on the team.
Do you feel more attached to the ones left now?
I actually do.
Yeah.
Like when I'm looking at the shelf, I'm like, you know, they're not all in the same class of I just can't wait to play it again. But anything on there, I'd be like, okay, let's play that again. Like, totally all about it.
So what is the game that you rediscovered at the bottom of a pile that you are now most excited to play that you haven't played in a while or haven't played at all?
So I mentioned the Star Wars Living Card Game.
Yeah.
So that one, and got a chance to play that one. I really like Star Wars Rebellion, but we were playing that for a little while, so that one doesn't count.
He's put on the spot.
I'm going to go with, I'm still going with Star Wars, but there was one other one that I
was going to guess Time Stories.
Well, so Time Stories, that goes into the section of I've never played it.
Well, that was part of the question, was the ones you've never played played in a while.
Of the ones I've never played. Yeah, Time Stories is probably the top of that list. I also really want to get the others to the table, which is Eric Lang's One Versus Many horror game. Dice City. I really want to play that, you know, that one I think we could just drop down. It's, it should be a relatively light game, I think. I also want to get Crysis, which is a Kickstarter that I got like 6 months ago, which is supposed to be really, really good, but I've never been able to get to the table.
Never gotten a table?
Yep. So, and then obviously Time Stories for sure as well. So of the games I haven't played yet, anything I put on there are games that I want to play. There are some games in the get rid of pile that I have never played, and I'm like, I just don't have the ambition to play them. So
there's a few still shrink wrapped over there.
Yeah. Yep.
It's ridiculous.
And final question, how do I decide when a game goes? So there's been a number of recommendations and things on this. When I play a game, do I log the plays? No. Do I make any kind of notes on it? No. I have thought of using, so I have this hanger system where every time I take something out of the closet, I slide everything else to the left. And when I put clothes away, I put it away on the right. So the further to the left you are, that means that's the longer ago that I've actually wore you. And so I can always go to the very left side of the closet and say, all right, I can just get rid of these.
Never going to wear these.
Never going to wear these again. You can't do that with games, though. It doesn't work as well.
I guess, think you need a post-it system.
Yeah. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to, when I play a game, I'm just going to put a little green post-it note on the top. Just one of the little 1-inch or 2-inch, actually probably 1-inch ones. And just put it on the top of the box, you know, far enough back where it doesn't make it look gross or, you know, doesn't disrupt so the OCD. Aesthetic.
Yeah. No, no, that's true. It would, yeah. It would look a bit ugly. Although there's a ton of post-its everywhere. All over the place.
Yeah. Right. So on the top of the box near the back. And then I can go through like a year from now and say, okay, what doesn't have a green post-it on it? Do I want to play this game? No? All right. Maybe we're sliding you off to the on the way out, you know, area.
Onto greener pastures.
Yeah. However, most of the time I know if I've like, I can go through the entire shelves of the games I kept and tell you probably it's the last time I played
it. Isn't it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, Scythe. The last time we played Scythe was when we did episode... Well, just after episode one, talking about Scythe.
Right.
I haven't played it since, but I want to play it. Right. I would play it in a moment if someone said, hey, let's play Scythe.
Right.
So, but it's not going anywhere. You know, Blood Rage, I remember the last time I played that. Arcadia Quest, Clank. Like all of these games, I remember the last time I played them. And even where I was at the time, maybe because I've only ever played them once or twice, so it's easier to remember. But so I don't know if I need a system, but I might add the post-it thing to it. Michael uses an app called Scorepad that tracks games and basically with he has about 50 to 60 games, and his rule is if he hasn't played it twice in the last 3 months or 6 months for a certain lighter game category, then it's potentially on its way out. So I'm like, all right, that's...
Yeah, but you're cult of the new. That's you couldn't really do that system, I don't think.
Well, he also has a rule that he plays a game about 5 times before officially adding it to his collection.
Wow.
That's a lot of gaming.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I could do that.
Well, it's like streamlining, though. He's not playing as many games, new games, as you are.
Right. Let's see. I want to read this blurb from Steve. He has multiple people in his house that has gaming collections. And he says, I keep them in four separate areas. Two are on the same set of shelves. He has games for kids, games for schooling, print and play games, and game components. And my personal collection, which is actually the smallest of that set of things. By organizing games by who likes them the most or what type of game they work with, then when I need a game, I go to the area for that group I'm playing with. This works best if you have multiple groups at different levels. Also, if I only like a game, it is gone. I either love it or I don't keep it. And if I have something else that I usually play instead, it is gone as well. And if I don't play a game enough to remember the rules, that is another good sign that it's just taking up space. So very much you're out of here if you're not the best thing ever. I wish I could do that. Although Demon Espionage did go directly in the giveaway pile.
Wait, what was the thing about Demon Espionage?
It was the Kickstarter social deduction one. I should give it a second chance. I don't really talk bad about a lot of games.
Oh, right. You're feeling guilty now because you talk bad about a game. No, it's fine. If you didn't like it, you know you didn't like it. It's fine.
You don't have to say, like, this game was terrible and poorly designed and I hated it. Say, I didn't enjoy this game.
Unless it's Yu-Gi-Oh.
This game, Yu-Gi-Oh, is the worst game in existence. I would play Cards Against Humanity for a week before playing another game of Yu-Gi-Oh. Actually, no. I do Yu-Gi-Oh first because it's only going to last about 2 minutes. So never mind. I take it all back. No, it did not work for the group I was playing with. And this is David Espinosa-Shaj. And the instructions were not as clear as I would have hoped.
Right.
Cute in premise, though. I like
okay.
that.
Okay.
What else? Anything else that we have to talk about organizing, managing our game collections? Any other advice you have for me?
Just if you want to get rid of more games, just explain to me which ones I need to take home because you think I like them. I'm looking forward to that talk. I want us to stand in front of it and you go, this game, you need to play this game. I think you're going
to
like it.
But I have to give you games that you would like and Gloria would play with you.
Yes, exactly.
Otherwise, it should stay here.
Other casual gamers like Gloria will play with me.
Yeah. Or, you know, you could just give Josh the game and let him expand his world. He doesn't just have to play
that's
with
true.
You, Chris.
That's true.
You could bring it to work.
Yep, exactly, yeah. There's actually a games room in Groupon, so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, work games, all the Tiny Epic games work fantastic for work games because they're very small, but they have a decent experience for that genre of game, whatever you happen to be playing. Also, Tiny Epic Quest just came out. Played that recently. So much fun. Little item meeples are carrying around shields and swords and going on quests and adventures.
Nice.
It's fun. We'll play it.
I'm down.
Yeah.
I do have one piece of advice for you. Keep at least one of your cubbies empty with room to grow at all times so that if you bring something home, you have a place to put it. But then that means within the next however long it's going to take you to go shopping, you need to move something out.
Yep. Good point.
Yep. And I accidentally did that because I have three little cubbies open in my collection shelves. And I'm like, I'm just going to leave them open. I have games that are on the other side that I've played that I'm like not sure if I want to keep in the collection. But I have a bunch of games I haven't played, which could be moved to the collection. So I want to leave some room.
Oh, yeah. And you've got like
room to grow.
You've got a pipeline of like months and months worth of Kickstarter stuff that is on its way to this house. It's turning up every single day. So you definitely need some free.
Not every day, but every week.
Well, yeah. You know what I mean?
I can't tell you how often Amazon buzzes our apartment.
Yeah, we have a little sign downstairs saying buzz the entire building anytime a package is dropped off so someone can come down and let it in. But yeah, no, you're right. You're right. We're going to play these games. Josh, you need to come over more often.
I do.
And earlier.
Yes.
I'm shaming you right now.
For having a job and not being able to get here before 6.
Exactly.
Yes.
So, by the way, next Sunday, we have to record on Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah. So for meta knowledge, this is Monday night again. Kitty's giving me a face.
Well,
next Sunday is my niece's birthday party.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, I don't know why we're talking show schedule right now, but there's an argument.
Let's go to the end.
This is post show talk right now.
All right. Post topic. Again, a big thank you to all our patrons that we're going to make Josh read in just a second. If you want to help, contribute to this mess, check it out at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You can always review us on iTunes as well. It makes us look super credible when we have reviews, and we love hearing about them. Also, any game that I don't give away... our current Patreon levels, I kind of want to like start donating back to a nonprofit, but we're kind of far away from that goal. But any game that's left over, I'm going to do, the Dice Tower does a Jack Vassil Memorial auction every year where people just put up their games and then they sell to other people. So people bid on things and then all of that money goes to charity. So anything I have left over, and I think pretty much what I'm going to do is, any game that does leave my collection, I'm just going to auction it for this if I don't give it away or get rid of it in some other way. So that is a good way to purge your games if you have games to purge. Actually, who mentioned this to me as a good way to do it? I don't remember. Oh, wait. Nope. It was Jason Rodney. So Jason, thanks for... I knew that existed, but it just didn't occur to me until he had mentioned it. So that was a great suggestion. But I think that's enough of me babbling. This was a lot of me talking because I'm getting rid of half my babies. So Josh, you can talk again.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review or email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to all our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Michael Smith, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, and Christopher Dong. Until next week, when we talk about
our favorite games.
Keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. Now we're stuck at coming up with favorite games.
Uh-oh. Way to go, Chris.
Sorry. Also, I'm attaching the entire theme music. From this point on, at the end, well, not from this point on, in this episode, you'll be able to hear the entire theme music if you just keep on listening. Good night, everyone.